made a model which is down at the base.
Yeah, a fairly large model. I would say it's probably about 6 foot square.
6 foot square.
Yeah. Okay. And then I started working with different size elements, inch to a foot or whatever. And then I went back up there, and I didn't quite know how I was going to proceed, and looked at the land again and put up some poles and walked around, and actually walked around with Clara, who's my wife, and tried to see if we could keep each other within eye shot. And once we couldn't, then we decided that that would give us other boundaries. So the boundary was determined by two people walking in relation to each other, of what you could see and what you couldn't see, and once you couldn't see, that space was no longer available to be included in. So we wanted the piece not only to be bounded by what is there naturally, but how two people walked the situation. And then we thought we would have, what we could possibly have, the piece measure not only the land, but your relationship to it. So we had to find a scale. Then I went back up there and took some stakes and put them in the ground, put some strings on them, looked at them. Then I had a much more conclusive idea about what I was doing. Then I didn't know if I was going to use 5 or 6 elements or 3 or 4 elements or how many. And then I had a surveyor come meet me out there and spent a morning with him. And we had the topographical map, and I marked out, I think, 5 footfalls, and I think we came up with 6 elevations, which would have been 6 elements, and thought it was overcrowded and looked like, didn't make sense, too busy, and didn't really articulate the land in the way I thought was meaningful. And then I think we got it down to 5 7-foot falls, and that was another day of staking out the surveyor, and it still seemed to overstate what was already there. And then we actually got it down, once we got it down to 8 feet, it spread out, it forked out more into the field, and we arrived at 4 plates that fall 8 feet over the distance. So if you went from an elevation, you walk down the hill 8 feet, and follow that elevation around, you walk down the hill 16, 24, whatever. Those placements, which is the quickest fall of the land, became where we would site the piece. And the longest plate was at the far end of the field, and that ended up, I think, being in excess of 55 feet. I think it's 58 feet long. Then we staked that out, and then again I went up there and looked at it, and then we restaked it out. And then I went up there and looked at it again, photographed it, walked it, remade the model, and then the model was submitted, and it's backhoed now, and we're going to put it in tomorrow. If you ask me, is that the content of the piece? Probably not. That's the procedure that I went through.
Okay. You know, you can talk the intention of the work into the ground, and everyone has good and honorable intentions, and it ends up being a lot of coffee table talk, and certainly I can be full of myself and lay out to you the specifics of my intention. And I can tell you the piece is a lot about walking the land and measuring your relationship to the land as the land falls and the piece rides out horizontally over the plain. Each plate is as long as it takes you to walk down a hill 8 feet over the shortest distance. So if you walk down a hill 35 feet, at that point you're 8 feet from the top of the hill, and that's where the plate goes. That's the quickest fall of that slope between those two elevations. And that seems a very efficient way of setting up a device in the landscape to allow you to see the fluctuation of the land. You can say, so well and good. There's a lot of ways to do that. There are also arbitrary ways of doing it. I mean, you can look at Noguchi, for instance, who sets pieces down, I would think, in relation to the scenography of the place. So it ends up being somewhat in the picturesque tradition. I don't work that way. I usually take some logical underpinning that's in the terrain itself that provides me with necessary clues in order to have some relation to my footfalls as walked to this shifting horizon, which ends up being the top line of the piece. It's a way of knowing my relation to my work and my relation to that area of land. And in some certain sense, it enables me to see into the landscape in a way that if I hadn't provided myself with some reasoning, I would be unable to. That's not to say that all reasonings aren't valid. It's just that I've happened to select a certain criteria which to apply to my reasoning that enables me to see further into what I want to do.
And I provided a length and a measure to allow you to see how they fell at different lengths. So when you're on one hill and you look across to the other hill, you understand that those two elements abridge the valley below. And you would have to be blind not to understand that. You can see immediately that they step down, even though they don't step equally, that the lengths step down and arrive at equal elevations across the valley. Here, they're spreading out and forking out as they step down. The difference is that the European tradition that I was trained in really was that landscape was something out the window. And the way that you learn landscape is by looking, if you don't walk around in the landscape, largely through paintings that are deal with Renaissance perspective out the window. One of the things that's very interesting about the gardens that were developed in the Rinzai sect of Buddhism, probably 15th century, particularly Myo Shinji, is that they're not set up on any idea of a central location in which to see from. There are no converging lines to this magnificent sunset. Basically, what there is if there's either a garden and a porch set up where you walk laterally, or there are other gardens set up where you walk in paths or arcs. And as you do that, often what you find is that if there are several elements, one appears and one disappears. So if you walk right, one will slide by and move to the left, or one will disappear, or there's one garden where there are eight elements, but you can never see more than seven of them. In order to understand that, you have to walk and you have to look. So it has a lot to do with anticipation, memory, and also has to do with the slowing down of time, that the information that you're responding to comes in over a longer duration. I mean, if you go there in the morning, you're there in the afternoon, you see the raking of the gravel. In the morning it has deep purple furrows, and in the afternoon it has hot white furrows. That's all part of how your relation is enhanced by something that's very, very artificial. Now, most art's an artifice. What I tend to do is to take the cues from the landscape to place the artifice in a way that it makes sense in relation to walking and looking. Most sculpture doesn't deal with that problem.
Okay. I begin to understand.
That's not to say it's a better problem, it just happens to be my problem.
Yes, but it's a problem that makes your sculpture at Storm King unique, because the way that you see the creative activity of making that particular sculpture.
Let's say if it's successful, it'll make sense to anyone who knows nothing about sculpture, nor is particularly sensitive to the land. It'll make sense in terms of its logic, even if one can't discern what its logic is. There'll be a rationale to one walking and looking that one comprehends, even if one doesn't have all the words or language or parts, I hope. And I think it's true.
Yes. And particularly in what they have said about Storm King, that is the relationship between sculpture and a natural environment. And what you point out in the beginning here is that many of these sculptures are transplants. They were done other places for other things, and they were set down there. So they really don't sit within the nature. And what you have more, I think, reason why Bill Rutherford got so excited in the beginning when he talked to him about it, he understood that you had really cut to the core of what they're talking about they want to do. But many people have not done. I mean, Noguchi, I filmed Noguchi making that sculpture in Japan. So that's where I first met Storm King. But again, he had come here and looked at it very, very carefully of what he wanted to do in relationship to this particular.
I think his piece is fairly successful, actually.
Yes. So I do too. But I also see what you're saying about the other pieces. They're done someplace else for something else, and they're brought there and set down, and they look a little.
See, usually what happens in those situations is that most of those pieces are studio built. And so then you have to adjust them to an uneven landscape. So as soon as you don't have a flat floor, that means that the piece isn't going to deal with the gravitational field of the ground as it shifts, as it would in an interior space. So immediately there's an ungainly situation in relationship to those pieces. And a lot of them look as if their internal gravity, as things, doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. In a sense, cemeteries make more sense. They're better group shows because, you know, it's logically plotted out and the pieces are dropped down.